Bibles to James chapter 5 this morning, James chapter 5, and we're going to continue with the thought that he's been going on the last few weeks throughout this last chapter and into this next one we're about to enter in this morning. And I'm excited about this because this really does boil down to very practical things with life, and it helps us to put things into perspective that usually get out of order. The last couple weeks we've been navigating through chapter 4. After he's been telling us what he expects or what he wants in our life, and that should produce a person who's living with the wisdom of God instead of the wisdom of themselves. And that's what we were talking about at the end of chapter 3. And at the end of that, it said that those who live that way will make peace. Now, through chapter 4, we've been talking about the reasons why there are wars and fightings in our life. There's a lack of peace in our heart. There's a lack of peace in our life. And there's wars and fightings, according to this chapter, in several different areas. It could be with other people. It could be with inside of your own heart, with your own flesh. And it could be wars and fightings by you fighting with God. And all of it, we learn, has to do with, at the beginning of that chapter, has to do with our lusts that war in our members. We learn that without humility before God and nearness to God, we're going to continue fighting for ourselves. And when we fight for ourselves, then we're going to create wars. Part of the manifestation of our pride is fighting for ourselves and our desires and our will, we learned last week. When we're planning everything in our life without looking to God for answers, then we're going to continue to have wars in our life. But in chapter 5, where we're going to get to this morning, he elaborates on this just a little bit more. He takes it one step ahead and he kind of attaches it to the truth that we learned in 1 Peter, that we don't belong to this earth. See, a lot of us are starting to fight for what we want, and that's why we have wars with other people. We're fighting for what we want, and that's why we're fighting against God, and we're fighting for our will and our plans. But as we get into chapter 5, he's talking about fighting for our things. Fighting for what we want, the things that we want in our life. Because part of the reason why we fight for something or we strive for something is because we think we need that thing. Or we think that if we have that thing, then we'll be happy. And that's why the person was fighting for his will at the end of chapter 4. Because he honestly believed that if he went into such a city and continued there a year and bought and sell and bought and sold and got gain, then he would have what he needed. But it wasn't that God's will, but that wasn't the point for him. But at the beginning of chapter 5, we see a different individual who is fighting for what he wants, the things that he needs. And the people that fight for stuff and for things usually are doing that because they think that those things will then complete them and make them happy. Just like the person thought that if he did that, whatever it might be, then that would make him happy, that would fulfill him. And none of it has to do with God's will, God's leading, but with what we want. And that will perpetuate fightings and wars in our life. Now, before I get into that, the fact is, when it talks about rich people, it's not condemning people for having things. It is not a sin if God gives you something. It's not a sin if God gives you more than somebody else. The problem when we get to this and when he talks about these types of people is that that is the center. And that is the goal of their life, are things. There's a difference between having things and living your life for things. Fighting for yourself, for what you want. If you're fighting for yourself and getting things with what this world says you need, then you will only have problems. I'm going to get into what those problems are, but before we do that, let's read verse number 1, and we're going to read down to verse number 6 this morning. Look what it says. Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were a fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and have been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. Now we're going to go talk about all that, but I want you to go back into verse number 1. Look at it. He says, go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Before he even tells you what the problem is, he tells them, those that are fighting for their life to get things, expect problems. Because if you're doing that, that's the center of your life, you're going to be causing problems in yourself. But I think it's very interesting how he starts that phrase, go to now. Does that look familiar? That's exactly how he started the phrase last time for the person the chapter before, just about five verses earlier, when he told them, go ahead and lead your own life. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such a city. It's the same word. He's saying, lead your own life. Go ahead. Blaze your trail. Follow your instructions. Follow your directions. You lead and see what that gets you. You lead in your will and see where that will end you up. This person, you lead in what you're going to work for and see what that's going to give you. And he says that what that's going to give you is problems. He's not saying that people who have money are bad people, but he is saying that those who live their life for what they want in order to get the things of this world will be very disappointed. What are you working for in your life? A lot of people, that what the center of their life is not necessarily that they want and that they're covetous, but a lot of people in our materialistic society, which is very different than most of the rest of the world, which has nothing, most of the rest of the world, which has not nearly anything compared to what America has, our society has dictated, if you have, then you're happy. And we are continually told that that's not true. We're continually seeing examples of that not being true, and yet we continue to live with part of the back of our mind thinking, if I have, then I will be happy. If I had this, then I'll be fulfilled. And like I said, none of those things are bad, but those who live their life for that will be disappointed. So we're going to look at the problems he tells us in these verses. What are the problems for leading your life for the things of this world? Number one, this is the first problem. Problem with that is that what you work for is always decaying. What you work for will always be decaying. If you're living your life for things, then what you are living your life for is constantly falling apart. That's how he describes it. Look in verse number 2. So cry and howl for the miseries that will come upon you. Why? Your riches are corrupted. Your garments are moth-eaten. Look at verse number 3. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you. Now, those first few phrases are relatively easy to understand. Your riches are corrupted. That means your wealth is rotting and perishing away. Your garments are moth-eaten. You don't even have to talk about that one. You open up your closet, and there's holes in your clothes because something is eating them up. And then the last one, your gold and silver is cankered. Gold and silver, your valuables are literally corroding. And they are rusting. They're decaying. They're being eaten up by, literally, the world is corroding them away. He's saying all the things you're working for, you have this big storehouse and you walk in and it's all just kind of falling apart. Its value is constantly going down. There's constantly when you buy a car and as soon as you drive it off the lot? Depreciation. That's what this world is. What you are working for is constantly depreciating. And we all know that, but yet we still can be under the impression that when we do something, it's set for forever. I was thinking about this when we were with the church building. When we first got here, we wanted to make sure things were nice. And so you paint the walls, you fix up a room. And then we built the new building, and we moved in, and we made sure those rooms were nice. And you check things off the list, and once you make something nice, you never have to think about it ever again, right? Well, what's interesting is that this year we're talking about trying to fix up our nursery. Well, why are we doing that? Because that was the first thing that we did. And so we've already done it. And now we have to do it again. Because your work on this world is constantly depreciating. Now, that's fine. We want the rooms to look nice. We'll put the effort into making sure that the house of the Lord is up to snuff. And we want people to walk in to make sure that they know that we think highly of what we're doing here. But at the same time, if that's what we're working for, if your house and what you have and your things and the way your walls look and what you have, if that's what your life is centered around, you're going to be disappointed by constantly being reminded that it's always falling apart. Your gold, your silver is cankered. And then it says this. Look at the end of verse, well, not the end of verse 3, the middle of verse 3, the last part I read. The rust of them shall be a witness against you. that when you go to court, there's somebody saying somebody's guilty, the other person saying somebody that they're innocent. You're guilty. No, I'm innocent. And so how do we determine that? By evidence. See, the rich person who is trying to work for this life, the evidence that he gives to the Lord that says that what he's doing is apparently a valid way to live is his riches. These are the evidence of the things that I have. But the Lord's evidence against him is it's rust. The way I'm living is perfectly fine. Well, what is the evidence? All the things I have. What's God's evidence against you? The fact that it's rusting. The rust is a witness against you. That's how he says that. The fact, when you just look at the things and you're constantly having to fix them, constantly having to build them up, if that's what your life is centered around, it's witnessing against you that that's not a valid way to center your life. It's witnessing against you because it's constantly falling apart. Proverbs 23 says this, "Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, and they fly away as an eagle toward heaven." That's always a humorous mental picture to me. Like, I just imagine this pile of gold, and it just sprouts wings and just flies away. You go in, and it's all gone. But that's the picture, because that's the way it is. You don't have security in the things of this world. It could change overnight. It could fly away. It could all be gone. Some random bill, some random storm could just take away the things you've been working for forever. And that's neither good or bad. It's just what it is. If you're working for this life, working for the things of this life, the problem with that is that it's always decaying. Number two, if you're working for the things of this life, and that's what you're fighting for, the decay will devour who you are. The decay that is coming, that will happen. You're a good person, you're a bad person. You're a righteous person, you always go to church, and you always read your Bible, you do what the Lord says, you obey what he says, or you're a bad person, you don't listen to any of it. Everybody has decay in the things of this world. It's just the way that it is. If your life is centered around that, then that decay will devour who you are. Now, why do I say it that way? Because let's look back into verse number 3. Your gold and silver is cankered. The rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were a fire. Fire just devours things. Now, how can the decay of gold and silver devour me? Because if gold and silver is who I am, if that's what I have made my life to be, my life is about the things that I have. When those things decay, they decay me along with it. If my life is centered around it. When I was thinking about that, I was thinking, I'm going to use a terminology as an example. In a couple other places in the Bible where it talks about how, even one place when we were in 1 Peter, remember where we talked about how a woman's adorning ought not be, or the way that she does her hair, or the things that she wears, or the gold and silver that she wears, all of that. The word adorning means to carefully place in order. It said her adorning should not be those things, but it ought to be the inward man of the heart. The whole phrase is saying, what are you spending your time and your energy and your life making sure is put into order? It shouldn't be the way that you look and the way people perceive you. It should be what your heart is like. That should be your adorning. Okay, that's the way that phrase means. A lot of people's adorning in their life are the things that they have. That is literally who they are. Their life is centered around, they are defined by the things they have laid up and stored for themselves. And as those things decay, then they will devour you with it because your life is connected with those things indefinitely. Does that make sense? If that's who you are, then when they go away, then it will take you along with it. And that's why a lot of people constantly seem to be falling apart. Because they have placed the definition of who they are into something that is also falling apart. If your life is centered around the Lord who never falls apart and who never changes and is never defeated, then no matter what else happens in your life and all your things fly away like they will and all the rest of your stuff devours, your life doesn't fall apart because you're centered around something that doesn't. And that's what a lot of people's problems are. They're centered around things that are constantly decaying, so their life is constantly decaying with it. Ecclesiastes 5, that should remind us of some things. Solomon, laid up all these things in store, spends the whole book complaining about how it didn't fulfill him the way that he thought that it would. In Ecclesiastes 5, he says, "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? It's no good except, oh, this is what I have. There it is. Good. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth the son, and there is nothing in his hand." It says he spends his life putting things up for him. The only good that it does is just to see that it's there. A lot of people get something. They spend their life obtaining something and put it in a closet and close the door and never open it because they don't want to make it fall apart anymore than it already is. But then that's the most that it's doing for them. And it says when those things will undoubtedly pass away, it's very common for them when to have a son, they have nothing to pass on to them. Because what they've been working for fell apart along the way. By the time they had something to pass on, they didn't have anything. It says that, and this is Solomon's description of riches, one of the richest men in the world. It wasn't somebody who was disgruntled with rich people because he was poor. This is somebody who had and said, this is not good. This is vanity. Those things, if they define who you are, will devour who you are. Number three, the third problem that he gives with working for the things of this world is that your eternal focus is wrong. Number three, your eternal focus is wrong. Let's look at the very end of verse number 3. I don't get any of my points from me. I just looked and saw what he said and put it on the page. Verse number 3 says, "All the stuff, the rust is a witness against you." And then he gets to the end. He says, "Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days." What's really interesting is the whole phrase, "heaped treasure together," all actually comes from one word. I didn't realize that until today. Well, not today, before today. But I didn't realize that until I was studying that verse. And heap treasure together literally is one word. They had a word in their language, just one word that meant to amass a pile of stuff. That's what the one word meant, to gather together a pile. It wasn't even a compound word. That's just the word. That's what some people did. They spend their lives amassing a pile of things. And it says they were doing that for the last days. So that when they would get to the end of their life, and they're to move on to eternity, and they're to stand before God and give an account for what they did in their life, they thought that the best way to prepare for that day was to amass a pile of things. "Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days." So now when I stand in front of God and I give an account for the things that I did in my life and all my treasure, all the things I've worked for is tried by fire. Those things that are actually valuable in God's eyes will stay, and all those things that are not valuable in God's eyes will burn up. And a lot of people spend their life preparing for that day by amassing a pile of things. That is the completely wrong focus for eternity. Your life is not centered here. If you were to go on a trip for 2 weeks, a month even, and you were to go visit somebody, you were going for a month. You knew that you were not going to live there for forever. You knew that you were going there temporarily. You're going to have a good time. You're going to experience what's there while you're there. You're going to enjoy it. But your entire trip would be in the perspective of the fact that you don't live there. And then after that trip, you would come home. So you probably wouldn't decorate your room. You probably wouldn't get things that could only be used there. You would probably be spending your time there trying to think of what you could take home. Well, you would find something I could put in my house at home. Things that I could bring back with me. Not things that are going to have to be left where I was. Why? Because I'm visiting here, but I live at my house. So whatever I can take back with me in my house, that's what I'll spend my time with while I'm on my trip. But a lot of people spend their life here decorating and amassing and piling up things that have to be left here. And don't even think about the fact that when they go home, they have to leave everything they're working for behind. Their focus is wrong. The fellows are coming by with their offering plate. You drop your attendance slip in. We'd appreciate that. Everything you do in this life should be in relationship with the fact that one day you're going to go home. And there's only certain things you can take with you. And if you spend your life here working for things that you cannot take home, then you've wasted the time that you could have spent on something more valuable. Proverbs 11 says this, "Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death." When you get to heaven, how much money you had, it's not going to make it any better or worse. It's not going to make heaven any better or worse. It's not going to make your account to God any better or worse. If you spend your life doing it, then it will make it worse because you will have wasted the time that you had. Matthew 6 says this, Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth. You know what that word is? It's the same word. Don't amass together a pile of stuff on this earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal. Why? Because it's going to go away. It's going to corrupt it. It can sprout wings and fly away. But, verse 20, amass a pile of treasures, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The people's heart are here on this earth, will be amassing a pile of things on this earth. Those whose heart is in heaven, those whose eyes are focused on eternity, will be laying up treasures there. Those who spend their life around the things here to make themselves happy have a completely wrong eternal focus. And one day they'll realize that when they realize they have all eternity ahead of them and the 80, 90, 100 years behind them, and they spent all of that time for there and none of it for eternity. That's a problem with fighting for this life. Number four, he gets a little bit more pointed. Number four, those who spend their life for these things, there is a willingness to hurt others. The more that you focus your life on what I want and what I can have, the less you start to actually pay attention to other people and what you're doing in your life affects them. Look at what he says next in verse number four. Behold, the grammar of this verse is a little bit back and forth, so we have to pay attention. The hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud, crieth. Okay, now I'm gonna stop there. We'll get back to the second one. The hire of your laborers who have reaped down your fields. To reap down a field literally means to harvest it. So it's ready for harvest. You've reaped it down, okay? And you hired them. You said, you go out, you reap down my field, you bring it into my barns, and I'll pay you X amount of dollars. He says, the people, the hire, the wages you've promised to these people who have worked for you so that you can have things, he says, it cries to you. Now, what does that mean? Why does it cry to him? Because of what it says in the middle. Which is of you, kept back by fraud. So the guy hires somebody, says, I'm going to give you this much money. You go out, you reap down my fields, put it into my barn so I can have things. But then when the time came to pay, he chose not to pay it. He kept it back by fraud. Now, why would he do something like that? Because he's more worried about what he can lay up for himself on this earth, so he's less focused about what his decisions are doing to other people. You see how that flows into that? That's why a lot of people are willing to hurt and fraud and cheat other people, because they're not worried about them as much as they're worried about themselves. They're not worried about what their decisions are doing to other people. They're only worried about what can be put into their barn at the end of the day. See, the guy wasn't so worried because he said, these guys are going to come out and they're going to put all my harvest into my barn so I'll have and then everything will be fine. And then what he's doing to them didn't really bother him as much. You say, well, I wouldn't do that. But I guarantee you, the more you focus on you and the things of this world, the less you focus on other people. You might not cheat people. You might not be dishonest like this guy, but I guarantee you, the more you focus on you, the less you focus on others. The more you focus on stuff, the less you focus on what it's doing spiritually to other people. And when our focus gets wrong, everything else gets put out of joint. Now, what does he finish with? This is interesting. So it's kept back by fraud, crieth. Look at the end of the verse after the colon. And the cries of them which have reaped, the guys you hired, are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Now, Sabaoth is not the same as Sabbath, so it's not the Lord of rest. Sabaoth is the word that means hosts. So you defrauding people is not only seen by the people that you cheated. It's seen by the God who sees everything. And also the God who's in charge of everything. And also the God that can do anything and can intervene anytime that he so fits. And also the God who has an entire army of angels at his disposal sees when you defraud people. See how he just kind of throws that in? By the way, those enter into the ears of the Lord of hosts. That's what that phrase means. He sees that. The fact is, every time you defraud somebody, anytime you cheat somebody, anytime you sin against somebody, you sin against God. Every sin is against God. In the Old Testament, I was going through this with the high school kids. In the Old Testament, there was many sacrifices described in Leviticus. Some of them were voluntary to show that you loved the Lord. Others of them were required. One of them is called a sin offering, and the other one was called a guilt offering. They sound the same, but they're not. A sin offering was what you did when you did something against the Lord. And so there was a requirement to sacrifice for your sin against God. A guilt offering was a required sacrifice when you sinned against your neighbor. But the way that you finished that sacrifice was that you had to make retribution to your neighbor and to God with that sacrifice. Because whenever you sin against someone, you also sin against God. So to make that right, you had to make it right with them and with them. And see, we don't realize what we're doing in our life. The more we focus on this world, the more we focus on our things, the less we think about others, and the less we think about them, the more quickly we will be to sin against them, and therefore sin against God, and put ourselves at enmity with him, and our lives are falling apart in the process of trying to build them up. That's why he goes back, verse number 5. You've lived in pleasure on this earth and have been wanton. That means that you've just enjoyed and done anything that pleased you. And ye have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. The day of slaughter was like when they would have a big feast and a sacrifice. And there was a lot of extra meat that they were allowed to take. You spend your life just giving whatever pleases you. But you have hurt people in the process. I mean, we just came out of the elections, and that was very obvious. I can't think about the people on both sides of the aisle. Where they, in order for people to want to lift them up, to put them in a place where they want to be, they have no qualms with throwing everybody else in the mud as far deep as they can make it. If I can find anything in their past, anything in their life that I can possibly throw any light on that's going to make them look bad, I have no problem with doing that as long as I get where my focus is. And see, I don't think these people are inherently bad people who are just trying to go around destroying other people's lives just because they disagree with them, because they're more focused on what they want to do than about the people that they affect. And we say, and isn't that a horrible thing? I see all the ads, and I hate to do that. But a lot of Christians are so worried about them that they hurt other people and don't even notice. They don't even see it because their focus is so much on themselves, they don't even realize what's going on around them. The more you work for this life, the more you'll be willing to hurt other people. 1 Timothy 6 says, having food and raiment, if you eat and you got clothes, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. What a descriptive way to say that. They fall into it. And all of their lusts, the things that they're working for, drowns them. If you were content, you would have been fine. You had food, you had raiment. But then when you're working for these things, it drowns you in problems. Number 5, I'm going to reference the next verse in a second. When you do that, soon your justice system is spoiled. Your justice system becomes spoiled. Now, I went through and just saw what he was saying. This is what he goes to next, verse number 6. You've lived in all of this stuff and wantonness. Verse 6, ye have condemned and killed the just. The just means the one who is innocent, the one who was righteous in the scenario, the one who did not do wrong. And he says, you've now condemned and killed them. How are we getting from rich to hurting people and condemning people who are innocent? Because the more you focus on you, the less you focus on others, the more your justice system gets all out of whack, because whatever gives you that is what is good now. Whatever robs you of that is now bad. See, good and bad then get flipped because good and bad is not defined by what God says or by what right is. It's defined by what makes me farther in my path. And bad is anything that pushes me back from what I want. And so then anything that gets in my way becomes a bad thing. So you've condemned and killed just people in order to go down your goals. Isaiah 5:20 says, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Well, why would people get that all out of whack? Because the more you focus on you, the less the right focus is in perspective. The less you're focusing on what God says, and the more it's about you, and then good and evil become switched, whatever helps you the most. I'm going to get to the next verse here, 1 Timothy 6. We were just in there. The men that get drowned in perdition and sorrow. Look what it says in verse 10, the very next verse over. "For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierce themselves through with many sorrows." Now, this does not mean that every single thing that is evil is rooted in the love of money. What this is saying is that the love of money and things can produce all evil. Any type of evil you can think of can sprout from the love of money. Because of my desire for things, people are willing to steal, people are willing to lie, people are willing to cheat, people are willing to hate, people are willing to murder, people are willing to commit adultery, people are willing to sell themselves. Every type of evil can sprout for the want to have. You say, well, I didn't think my justice system would get spoiled if I want to have something that I don't have already. The more you focus on the love of things, it produces all kinds of evil. Right becomes opinion, wrong becomes non-convenient but sometimes necessary, and things get all blurred. Everything gets put out of perspective because what I want is in my focus. And we say, well, we're Christians, we don't go there. But the more you think that way, the closer you get. The less you think about others, the less you think about right, the more you think about you, the more things you justify in your life. And you're going to be constantly having wars and fightings working for your things. The last thing I want to mention is probably the most discouraging and the most scary along the way. Number 6, your justice system is spoiled, but number 6, God can, he doesn't always, but God can let you go. God lets you go. Verse number 6, "Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you." Well, last chapter, we were just talking about, you know, God resisteth the proud but gives grace to the humble. You go against God, God goes against you. How did I get to the end of that section and end up with the phrase, "He doth not resist you"? What do you mean, does not resist you? If you continue to go against God and he continues to tell you his will for your life, what your focus ought to be, what you ought to be working for, what you ought to be spending your time and your energy on. We're so busy the last two lessons saying, this is my will, this is where I'm going to go, this is what I'm going to get, this is what I'm going to do, and this is what's going to be the outcome. And we get to the next, so this is what I want, and this is what I need to have, and if I don't have these things, I won't be happy, even if it does end up hurting other people. That whole time, we're resisting God, and eventually God lets us go. He does not resist you. The Bible makes it very clear that there are times where God says, fine. Dad, could you help me real quick? We were talking about this recently. People are like, why is God resisting me? That didn't seem very nice. If you resist God, God resists you. So if God is going this direction and I'm trying to go my direction, he says, go this way. And I say, I don't want to go this way. God resists me. God resists me. And I was like, but I don't want to do this. But eventually, God might say, and so I'm going the wrong direction, and now I don't have anything stopping me anymore. Well, apparently, God says it's fine. If you resist God long enough, God's not going to stop what he's doing. God might tell you, hey, come over here, but after a while, he does not resist you. See, at the end of the day, you're going to find the consequences to your decisions. At the end of the day, you're going to have to stand in front of the Lord, and you're going to have amassed your pile of stuff, and it's not going to do you any good. But during your life, there comes a time where he says, fine. He says that many times in the Bible. In Romans chapter 1, talking about people doing what they want, had their own right and wrong. Verse 24 says, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. A couple verses later. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, I don't want to think about what God wants. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Well, this is what's right, but I don't want to think that way. Fine. Then don't. And if you continue to fight against God, I don't want to do what you want, I want to do what I want, eventually he'll say, fine. And then we say, well, God, why'd you let me go? Because you've been fighting with him this whole time. You've asked him to stop fighting you. You've asked him to let you do what you want to do. You've asked him to let you go down your path, and maybe one day he'll actually let you have your prayer. Be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you work for. If you're working for you, eventually he's going to let you work for you and find out what that gets you. Now, 1 Timothy 6, a little after the verses we've been reading, and I'll be finished. Charge them, Paul says to Timothy, about these men. Love of money is the root of all evil. He says a few verses later, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. See, you don't need those things to have joy. God gives you joy. God gives us richly things to enjoy. God is our joy. Don't trust in those. That they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. He says there's some people who have a lot of things, and that's fine. Tell them that they shouldn't focus on those things. Tell them to trust in the Lord. Tell them to remember that those people that may have things will not find joy in those things, they'll find joy in the Lord. Tell them that they should be ready to give because God's given to them. Tell them that they should be ready to tell other people about what God has done, ready to communicate. Tell them to lay up for themselves store, not in this earth. Tell them to lay up for themselves treasures in heaven, even though they may have treasures on this earth. Tell them that it's not going to give them what they've been told that it would. And there's a lot of people who spend their life fighting for what they have or what they can have, and they ruin and decay their life in the process. And he's telling them, my friend, lead your life. That's fine if you're going to go and do what you want, but don't expect it to take you where you think. Let the Lord lead your life in his will and what he gives you, and follow his will. Don't be fighting him, or you're going to have wars and fightings in your life. He's going to finish here in the end of chapter 5 with a couple last points. But all this has to do with surrendering to what the Lord has for you instead of trying to fight for what I want. If you don't, it's not going to be peace. It will only be fightings. We're going to pray really quickly, and we're going to have a couple quick prayer requests from Brother Paul here in just a moment, and we'll be dismissed. Thank you for listening this morning. Father, thank you so much for giving us so many rich things richly to enjoy. And Lord, it might not be worldly things, but the fact that you are in our hearts, the fact that you guide us, gives us the peace and the joy that cannot be matched by anything the world can give. And so, Lord, we thank you so much for how you provide for us, but help us to keep our eyes focused on you and not here. Lord, I pray that you would meet with us this morning as we're about to go into our morning service. I pray you would answer each one of these prayer requests we're about to hear in just a moment, that you would meet those according to your will as well. We put into your hands, Lord, we pray so in your name. Amen.